This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Autism occurs approximately one in every 68 births in the United States, but the root cause remains a medical mystery. Although early screening and therapy makes a world of difference for children on the autism spectrum, getting that early and sustained help may not be that easy. Autism spectrum disorder is a complex developmental disability that affects individuals in varying degrees. Symptoms affect behavior, social skills, as well as speech and nonverbal communication. But what are the facts about autism, and how is this condition diagnosed, and how can it be treated? What resources are available in San Antonio for children and their families? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a question about autism, if you've got a story you want to tell us about autism in your family, help inspire others and let other people learn from your experience, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour by Dr. Patricia Del Angel. She is a developmental behavioral pediatrician with the Autism Community Network. Kim Jeffries is the CEO of the Brighton Center in San Antonio. Bianca Jaramitas is with us, and she is a parent of a child who has autism, Isaiah, age 5. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here today.
Great to be here.
So, Dr. Del Angel, let me ask you about, you know, the spectrum. We hear about the spectrum all the time. What is this spectrum?
Well, we talk about a spectrum because autism may be impacting a child in different ways. You know, it could be something very mild, or the impairment might be more severe. So anywhere between a mild impairment to a more severe symptoms of presentation of autism could be present. And that's why we talk about a spectrum.
It seems odd to me that we lump everybody together that way. I mean, you could have a child who is nonverbal, and another child who is verbal and who is interactive but maybe a little quirky, and still you're saying they're on the same spectrum.
Well, they're all maybe qualifying for the diagnosis of autism, but there might be the impact in the child or their performance and their ability to learn and interact with the world around them might be different, because some children are have different abilities, but they might still be impacted, and the symptoms are also very different, and they're different in every child with autism. So we do not have a group of children that really reunite all of the symptoms that people usually identify as being related to autism.
Kim Jeffries, CEO of the Brighton Center in San Antonio. Can you talk about how you interact with the people who have autism in San Antonio, children?
So we work with very young children, babies and toddlers with disabilities or delays. So most of the time we're at the forefront of seeing those red flags and recommending that the family go see a developmental pediatrician or go to the Autism Community Network to further get a diagnosis. And then we have two centers, child care centers, that work with kids with and without disabilities. So we have a lot of children with autism enrolled in our center. And then we also, you know, when kids transition into public school, we make sure that the school is doing the right types of assessments for the children, and then help the families advocate for their kids to get the right educational plan built so that child can have the best opportunity for success as they transition through school.
So we hear, as you have a child, an infant, and you're looking for these developmental cues that they're supposed to, maybe you have a book that tells you they're supposed to sit up by this age and be able to have pre-language at this month. And then and maybe you have a child that's not really going along according to the book, and you're starting to have some questions, and you say, well, my child is perfectly fine. She does all these other things great. But I don't think she's autistic. Do you need to go find out for sure? Do you need to go get a screening?
Absolutely. And what we tell families is it's peace of mind either way. Either way, you figure out that everything is on target and on track. Or on the other hand, you're getting the diagnosis early enough to get the services that are going to make a difference in your child's life. So that child that may be nonverbal at 2 or 3, getting those early services and getting ABA and intensive therapy throughout those early years, by 5 or 6 may be delayed, but may develop some language skills.
Even if my child is showing nothing that would give me any hint that there's autism, any spectrum activity here, should I still get screened? At what age?
Okay. I'll let Dr. Patrick talk about
that. Okay, doctor?
Yes. Pediatricians and family practice doctors, they're always seeing children throughout their lives. And children usually have a schedule, and they visit the doctors regularly, like every 2 months. And pretty much during all that time, pediatricians are supposed to be doing developmental surveillance. And this is just regular surveillance to keep up with their development. And it could be any type of skills. We're looking at motor development, social skills, adaptive skills, speech. But in 2007, there was a very important publication that came through. And this was published in the journal Pediatrics, it is published by the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it really established some ways of identifying and treating autism. And ever since, you know, eventually the American Academy of Pediatrics came up with guidelines to, in addition to do the regular developmental surveillance in children, they added some specific autism evaluations to really, this is a screener again. We don't know anything about the child. These are children who come to a regular pediatric clinic and they get evaluated at 18 months and at 24 months of age.
18 months and 2 years old.
Exactly.
And that's when you go in and you get screened and you get a diagnosis and something to work from there.
What you do not get a diagnosis. Okay. What you get is an index of whether your child is at high risk for autism or is your child presenting some red flags for autism, and that's what you're getting through those screeners. So again, you know, at 18 months or at 24 months, the pediatricians usually have this within their practice, and during those visits, they get screened.
Is that enough information to make some decisions with?
Definitely. I mean, this is really just sort of like the first step. Once a pediatrician identifies some red flags, the pediatrician has to go to an algorithm as to what do I do next. And according to the algorithm, whether, you know, how many, you know, how much of a concern there is for a child who might be low in the level of concern, but we're seeing some developmental delays, perhaps this is a child who needs to be really, you know, sent to KIMS and get some early childhood intervention services. But if there is a high concern for autism, the child could be sent for another screener or another step in the assessment.
We're going to take a caller. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation as we talk about autism and how you can access services here in our community, we're joined by Rochelle. And Rochelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for holding on. Go ahead, Rochelle.
This conversation hits really home for me because my son, he's 5 years old. He just turned 5. If I had told you the story and the list of things that I've had said to me just by various doctors, of questions that I've had that just hadn't pointed in the right direction, you would be horrified. But on my own, I actually found out at UTSA there's an autism research center for ABA therapy. They do it free. And that has just been such a blessing for us because we were told we needed ABA therapy, but there was no way we could afford it. We had him in occupational therapy for roughly 3 years, couldn't get an exact diagnosis of autism of any kind. I was told sensory processing disorder. Texas doesn't really recognize sensory processing disorder. I ended up going to a developmental pediatrician who, in a nutshell, basically told me, no joke, my kid was just a brat and an only child. That just was devastating to me because I knew something was wrong, but I kept not knowing what was wrong. Make a long story short, I went to a neurologist. The neurologist right away diagnosed him with PDD-NOS, which is invasive developmental delay, not other specified, because he did converse. He has amazing conversation skills, but he doesn't, I'm sorry, it's not conversation skills. He talks a lot about what he wants to talk about, but I knew something was missing. It wasn't until I went to the ADA therapy for that free 3-month trial that I discovered he didn't ask WH questions. So he never asked who, what, where, when, why. So I knew something was missing from his language, just no one could tell me what, until I ended up going to UTSA. And it's 3 months. It was a 3-month program. I'm actually on my way down there right now. They see him for an hour every day. And now my son asks who, what, where, when, why. I'm having conversations with my son that I never had. Now, there are still things some missing from our conversations, but I've just been blown away by what they've been able to do for me.
Rochelle, thank you so much, and I'm glad to hear that you're making progress, and fantastic that you called in with that story. We got a lot of nodding heads and also some wide-eyed reaction when we heard that one of the doctors said that your child was a brat and an only child. So real quickly, Dr. Delangel, can you just react to that?
Well, it is surprising to me, especially if it's coming from a developmental pediatrician. Because, it would be surprising to me if it's coming from any physician or provider, because, you know, it just seems, you know, like such a rash decision, you know, to make, or statement to make to a parent. And to me, it's very important to listen to the parents. The parents see their children day in, day out, and they know way better than any other person could.
Well, sometimes the parents are the ones that are in deepest in denial. So, you know, that's also, you have someone can tell them, your child is on the spectrum, and they say, no, he's not. He's a brat. You know, I mean, okay. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to bring in Bianca Ramirez into our conversation. She's a parent. She's with us in the studio. She has a child who has been diagnosed with autism, Isaiah, age 5. And Bianca, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here. So when I talk about denial and issues of denial, does that sound familiar?
Yes, definitely. When I was starting to hear that my son might have autism, it was really scary. Because I didn't know anything about autism like many parents. We were just kind of shocked and surprised that, you know, it was possible that he might have a developmental disability. And I think it's like that for a lot of parents. We went through a stage where, you know, it was like, well, maybe he doesn't have it, or maybe he only has a little bit of autism. And, you know, really questioning myself, like thinking, is there something that I could have done better? And it's really challenging, because once a parent, first for many parents, once you get told that your child may have autism, or they get diagnosed with autism, it's challenging to process all of that information and to all of a sudden have to realize that, okay, I need to learn everything I can about autism. I need to be an advocate for my child. I need to be a voice for my child, and to process all those feelings of, you know, the struggle, the stress, you know, understanding and learning that your child is going to be different, and the stigma that comes with that in a world where people don't understand those who are different. And all those feelings that you go through, all those emotions, they're very normal. So for parents out there who are feeling, you know, upset because they might have not responded positively the first time, or because they feel sad or angry or upset, those are all very normal feelings, and you need to process all that until you finally accept that your child is going to be different and that there is hope. Early intervention is hope.
So Isaiah verbal?
Isaiah is nonverbal.
Okay. When did you realize that Isaiah needed extra therapy, extra help?
Well, at first it was hard, because like another caller had mentioned, you are not able to get services until you get that diagnosis. So when my son was 1, we weren't able to get many services other than speech therapy, OT through Easter Seals. And we had to wait for that diagnosis through Autism Community Network. And it was difficult because there was a wait list. And that's one of the issues, is that there's so many people waiting in line trying to get that diagnosis, and without that diagnosis, they cannot get treatment. So for us, it was difficult to get early intervention until we got that diagnosis. And it was, I think we waited about 3 to 6 months, but now it's actually a year or longer to get diagnosis. And thankfully now we do have ABA, and it is a struggle still because ABA is very expensive and insurance does not cover everything.
ABA, what is that?
ABA is Applied Behavioral Analysis Therapy, and it's actually the number one intervention for children on the spectrum.
Have you seen benefits from the therapy?
Absolutely. My son has improved so much since he started. It's been amazing to watch him grow and thrive.
So these are individuals, these therapists, they know what they're doing. They have been trained. And this is this interactive behavioral therapy that's being applied to your child, and there's response.
Yes. Yes, there's been.
And this is something you probably could not have done on your own.
Oh, definitely not.
Wow. Okay. And so tell me, Kim Jeffries, can you talk about that a little bit?
So, you know, I think it is interesting because there are services available, even if your child doesn't have a diagnosis, but it's getting directed to them appropriately, like Easter Seals or Brighton, those therapies, you know, the OT, the speech. But, you know, for ABA therapy, you know, we've had children even in our ECI program who receive ABA therapy, and the results are amazing. And we had a little girl recently who was, you know, her parents couldn't really take her anywhere because she would have meltdowns and, you know, exhibit some of those typical symptoms that people think of sometimes when you see a child with autism. And after intensive ABA therapy, for just a period of maybe a couple of months, she made significant strides in her ability to transition to different environments without having meltdowns. And that doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you're going to the grocery store and you need to take your child, if they're having a meltdown and the stigma is there, it's a big deal.
And it's also helping the parents learn how to cope with those situations so that they can de-escalate the tension.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect example. It's, you know, looking at minimizing some of those behaviors and giving them a replacement behavior for those times. And so parents learn strategies along the way that they can generalize in other situations, not just that one situation that they're working on. And so it is an intervention that works.
And this is an intervention that we need to make other people aware is here, how to access this these opportunities. There's stuff that's free here in San Antonio, and there's information online. So we're going to talk about all that when we come back. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about autism awareness here in San Antonio and services that are available and making sure that children are screened for autism. It's amazing what can be done with the services that we have here in San Antonio and the behavioral help that we have available with us. We're joined by Dr. Patricia Del Angel. She's a developmental behavioral pediatrician with the Autism Community Network. Kim Jeffries is the CEO of the Brighton Center in San Antonio, and Bianca Ramirez is a parent of a child, Isaiah 5, who has been diagnosed with autism. And you're invited into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. And Rachel is on the line. And Rachel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Thanks for holding on.
Hi. Yes. I have an autistic brother, and so I commonly try to keep up with the research that's going on about it. And you see a lot of stuff that's looking for sources of how it's a damage or almost like a defect caused to the brain. But a recent study showed that it's actually a correlation between that they tend to have a higher number of neuroreceptors in the brain than a normal brain does, which makes sense because that can add to the sensory overload that they tend to have with autism, but also makes sense when you look at it from the side that there's also a correlation of savantism among autistics. So I guess my question really kind of is, is there any research going on out there that's looking at it more from an angle of almost like an evolutionary step in the brain that's making us the more cognitively enhanced, but they tend to be then less physical and less socially interactive, which isn't necessarily needed so much in our society anymore?
Rachel, thank you for that call. And so, Dr. Patricia, you're a doctor, a medical doctor. You know, the causes of autism, There's a lot of research in that area.
It's a lot of research. It is ongoing. I don't think that there is a single identifiable reason for autism. It is suspected to be genetic in nature, and the reason for that is because we see it in families. We see it in identical twins and non-identical twins. So we have seen, you know, children, families who have more than one child with autism. In terms of the specific question, you know, about neuronal interconnectivity, which I think that she was alluding to, there have been so many theories. Many of them have not been necessarily debunked, or they're still being studied at the time. But one of the things that happens with the neurogenesis, which is the production and development of neurons, you know, as an organism is developing, and it happens all throughout the embryonal life and fetal life, and we know that still keeps on happening. We're still having changes as we get into our 20s. But there's a period of time during, and you know, early childhood, when it seems that there's so much proliferation of neurons. It is really the interconnectivity also between neurons. So they develop all these connections, and in time, these connections must really be pruned. So you do not stay with this, all the connections that you made during early childhood. I mean, some things get super specialized, and basically the things that are relevant to us tend to be the ones, you know, that are keep on having repeated firing, and you get to be specialized in a lot of the neurons get to be specialized. What she's talking about is that many of these children also seem to have some great skills, although they might be not having the same skills in the social area, or the emotional area, and the ability to connect or having speech. Many of these children are actually some children who can learn to read from a very early life. Some of them are two and they're reading already. Or they seem to have an incredible memory and the ability to really capture a lot of the knowledge about a specific topic of interest. And by the way, you know, that's part of the reasons why we also look at head circumference in the younger children. I mean, because it was thought that there was a period of time during early childhood where it seems that the head size is larger. And we keep track of that. And pediatricians do keep track of that in general. And when it's necessary, and there's concerns about that something could be structurally different, the children get referred to a neurologist and perhaps get a workup to check inside the brain. But in general, it is believed that still there's pruning even after that. So the proliferation of neurons doesn't get to accumulate all of the neurons, you know, and the connections.
Let's go to the caller. And this is Kara. And Kara, thanks so much for your call. You're on the air.
Hello, thanks for having me. I'm with Autism Lifeline Links, and Autism Lifeline Links' goal is to increase the service capacity, decrease wait times, and improve the system of care for people with autism in our community. It's a new project. It's been up for about a year and a half, and it's out of the Kronkowski Charitable Foundation. We do this through a collaborative of 10 agencies working together, two of whom are represented on your panel today with ACN and Brighton Center. We do seamless referrals for services in this platform. This helps us to increase communication, and more importantly, it helps so that families and caregivers don't have to tell their story again and again every service provider that they encounter. As you cited, we know there are 23,000 people in our county with autism, and we are working to try to get every person counted, every person with autism, adult and child, registered with Autism Lifeline Links. Because on the backside, what we're able to do is identify the barriers and the wait times that the mom had just spoken of. We can try to address those by combining great stories as well as the raw data to improve the system of care, decrease wait times, let families know that services are available while they're waiting for that diagnosis as well.
And that data that you collect, that can be taken to Austin and being used and bring to our lawmakers and show them that every dollar that we spend in this area today provides a lifelong results and can save many, many, many dollars down the road. Is that one of the arguments that you bring forth?
Absolutely correct. And last biennium, in the last legislative session, we were able to take the data points that we had and meet with Senator Campbell and Speaker Strauss, and we were able to help get a legislative agenda on board and pass the ABA bill that allowed for licensing of ABAs in our county, in our state, because that did not exist before. This next biennium, we'll be working on the waiver wait list, the Medicaid waivers and the wait list. Our community has not had anyone released off those waivers in 3 years. It will be 4 years before the next session comes around. And that is a tremendous cost to us as a community. And we're working on even the deferred costs of what residential care or institutional care would cost versus a waiver to keep someone at home and in their community with some supportive services.
So the difference that this would make, being able to apply these services to children at an early age, would be whether or not a child would be able to go on and live pretty much an active life and get a job and do everything else, or not, and then go into a group home or something else. I mean, it seems like a big difference that these services applied at this critical time can have in how these people will interact with society.
Absolutely. One of the things that we do know from national research, and we've applied it here in San Antonio, is that if a child can receive the ABA therapy before they arrive at school at age five, we as a community are saving $10,000 a year in special education cost just because that child had 2 years of ABA therapy before they arrived at school. So those things are really key, and they have a big economic impact on our community. We just need to know where the people are. We need families and adults and children who have autism to register with us at autismlifelinelinks.org. Because what we can do with that data, and it is protected in this,
right.
You know, it's HIPAA compliant, it's all very protected, but it allows us to really make this community a place where everyone with autism lives to their full potential.
Kara, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. That's going to wanted to look at the public policy side of this, mm-hmm. and that makes a big difference. And so, but let's go over to Kim Jeffries, the CEO of the Brighton Center of San Antonio. Can you talk about how that is meets where the rubber meets the road?
Yeah, it's one of those things, and why ACN, Autism Community Network, and Brighton Center are a part of this project is we want to do something beyond just the services that we're providing. And so entering data and providing information to inform our system of care makes a difference. And so we're all doing that and a part of that because we want that family who, you know, was struggling to get ABA. ABA therapy is still not covered by Medicaid. It's a huge issue in our community, and the passage of the licensure of board certified behavioral analysts, BCBAs, in the state of Texas, which starts September 1, they're going to have to be registered, is the first step in getting that. So you think about the population in San Antonio, the families who are relying on Medicaid for their health services, they don't have access to ABA. So we want to collect enough data to say we have this many families in San Antonio, in Bexar County, who are on the spectrum, have a young child that 3 to 5 and are not eligible for ABA because it's not paid for by Medicaid, so that we can take it to our legislators and say, you either pay now or you pay later. And so invest 2 years now or invest $10,000 extra a year for the next 18 years while they're in school. And then there's a cost to that, not just the economic cost, but that child's life and their ability to live a self-sustaining and full life as they get older.
So Bianca Ramirez, your Isaiah, age 5, your child diagnosed with autism. When before you entered this journey, did you realize there was so much bureaucratic red tape was going to be involved? You thought that this, well, I need these services, and I thought these services would be available, but unfortunately, it's not that easy.
Yes. Before my son got diagnosed, I did not know that there was going to be so many barriers to getting treatment or services. And she's right, as Kim said, Medicaid does not cover ABA therapy. And at that time when my son was getting diagnosed, I had Medicaid, and I was just really surprised that Medicaid did not cover the number one intervention for children with autism, because that makes a huge difference. So families that are low income are missing out on that really significant therapy that could help their child reach you know, those milestones that they need to and fully thrive in life. So you have a population that is missing out on those resources and those services that are so needed because Medicaid does not cover it. So it's really important that we all advocate for Medicaid to be able to be applied to ABA therapy so those kids can get that and so they can reach full potential.
And one more time, ABA stands for?
Applied Behavioral Analysis.
Okay. All right. Let me get, I got some other callers here. They've been waiting, so let's get them on the air. Rosa. Hi, Rosa. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question. My question is, many parents are stressed, and do they get therapy, and also do they give these programs in Spanish, and do they give classes for people who want to do babysitting for friends who have children with autism? That would be awesome to get that answer. I will hear over the radio.
All right, Rosa, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. So, Dr. De Langel?
Yes, we actually, aside from the diagnostic services that we provide at Autism Community Network, we also provide training for professionals, but also for parents. We have a series of classes that we do that are at no cost, and we actually encourage the families not to come just themselves, but bring any other family members who is involved or who wants to know more about autism.
Or caretaker?
That's correct. I mean, we understand the caretaker is dealing with this child, you know, perhaps on a daily basis. And the better they are informed, you know, how to help the child is the better for everybody. So we have those classes that are free of cost. And then we have also some more specialized interventions that we do with our families. We call them training because it is really trying to train the parents and giving them some of those skills that the therapists actually have. For example, we do have a training in ABA. We have the Applied Behavioral Analysis. It's an 8-week course that we do with a family. It's usually one parent and the child together, and they come and see us every week for 8 weeks. And not only on ABA, we have another course, another 8-week training for sensory. An occupational therapist is in charge of doing that sensory integration and processing disorders type of course. And we have one more. There's another modality of treatment that we don't talk about a lot in Texas in general that is called DIR floor time. And we have another occupational therapist who also has a doctoral degree in infant mental health who's in charge of that training. 8-week intervention as well.
So a lot of families here in San Antonio are Spanish primarily. So is there help for them?
It is. Many of our providers are actually Spanish speakers, with a few exceptions. And even the ones who don't speak the language, they do get by. And they, you know, so our interactions, our evaluations, they're all bilingual. And I think that could be very, very helpful.
And there are a lot of agencies in San Antonio who provide all kinds of services and in English and Spanish. And I think because of the predominantly Hispanic population here, we do as well. I know Any Baby Can does, you know, the ARC does. So any of the services that you're looking to, there's definitely an option for that. I do think it's important for families to be connected with a case management agency. And I know that's sometimes a word where families are like, I got it. I don't need help. But you don't know what you don't know. And so if you don't know what's out there, or if you have to kind of figure out this complicated maze of services in San Antonio that are in English or Spanish or that are covered by your insurance or not, a case manager can help you do that. And so as a part of Autism Lifeline Links, we have two case management agencies, Any Baby Can and the ARC. There are others in town too. So getting connected with them, they can connect to those Spanish resources in town.
Exactly. Time for one last call. This is Tracy. And hi, Tracy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I actually have two sons that are autistic, and what I wanted to talk about, I also want to thank Autism Care Network because they have helped me with both of them. I couldn't have done it without them. My older son is 11, and he was diagnosed whenever he was 2 in 2009, and he was diagnosed as very severe, and I worked really hard with him, and today he's, you know, he speaks fully. He has a lot of those special gifts that, you know, that y'all were talking about, his memory and, you know, but he does have a lot of impairments and they're all invisible, you know, they're very, where you can't see them. Well, so I waited to have another child, and whenever I did, he did not have the same issues. So he was born in 2011, and I, you know, it took me a long time, even as a seasoned, you know, autism parent who had dealt with severe issues.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it. And that's something that I like to say to a lot of new parents is that forgive yourself. Because mm-hmm. even me, who knew what I had to look for, I had trouble seeing it. And it turns out that my son, who did not present as severe to begin with, is more severe than his brother. He's 6 now and still nonverbal.
Wow.
You know, so I had a 3-year-old, you know, my older son, he started reading at 3 years old. He was hyperlexic. He was barely verbal, but he could read. And then I had, you know, then my second son, he still has trouble figuring out that his name is Finnegan, you know.
Wow. Like, Tracy. You know, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. I wish I could give you more time, but I can't. And so she brings up so many different things. We just go back to the screening, which is something that we wanted to stress today, and that you think you may know it, but maybe you don't. And so you got to get the screening. And so Bianca Ramirez, you're our parent in the storytelling. Talk about that. You know, what do you tell folks? What do you advise them?
From one parent to another, and also as an advocate for this population, what I tell a lot of people is there's hope. Early intervention is key. Make sure you get your child screened, because the faster you get screened, the faster you can rule out if there is autism or not, and then you can get those services that can help your child thrive and get those resources that you need.
All right, and when you need services, look up Brighton Center in San Antonio, look up the Autism Community Network, and we have some other links on our site, tpr.org, to help you. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Patricia Del Angel, developmental behavioral pediatrician with the Autism Community Network, Kim Jeffries, CEO of the Brighton Center of San Antonio, and Bianca Ramirez, our parent. Thank you so much for joining us. Give Isaiah a big hug for all of us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.